All right. Well, thanks for joining me on the podcast, guys.
It's a pleasure to be here. I've always wanted to be on this cast.
Yeah, we've been meaning to do this for quite some time. I've been meaning to have you guys on this. So thanks for joining me again. So we're going to talk about bonobos today. Do you guys know of bonobos or have heard of them before?
I've heard of them. They're small monkeys, right?
How big is the bonobo compared to me?
Compared to you? Well, you're pretty small, so about your size. No, they're quite a bit smaller than you. They're about, on average, about like 85% the size of a chimpanzee. So for a long time, they were thought to just be chimpanzees, but a smaller subspecies. That's why they were called pygmy chimpanzees for a while. Until modern DNA testing proved that they're their own species. And actually, kind of interesting tangent, the Congo River separates the ranges of chimpanzees and bonobos, and it's thought that they that river formed at some point while they shared a common ancestor, and because the river became so big, it like split them from each other for millions of years, and that's how they evolved to be what they are today.
Huh. That is pretty interesting. I definitely wouldn't have guessed that. Do they have any specialized foods that they eat in their different regions?
Well, they actually are limited to a pretty confined range of tropical jungle in Central Africa near what's now the Democratic Republic of Congo. I've never been myself, but it looks like a really cool area. Have you guys ever been to Africa?
Nope. I've been to Africa. I didn't go to the Congo, though.
Where did you go?
Senegal and Morocco.
That's north and northwest?
Yeah. Definitely. Like, yeah, north and then like right where the Sahara ends, pretty much. But no monkeys.
No monkeys. No dang. Monkeys. At least that you saw.
Yeah. There probably were monkeys, but I don't know. I don't know. I'm not going to claim to be a monkey expert.
Fair enough. Bonobos are super cool though, because they live in big tropes that are matriarchal. So the women or the females are for the most part dominant over the males, and they'll still have one male that's kind of the alpha that, you know, leads the troop in the right direction, or kind of like is a peacekeeper, but he has to make peace with the alpha females in order to retain his position. So they're pretty cool like that. And they split up during the day. So they form these big tropes that split up during the day. And they're formed by groups of brothers and fathers around the mother. So they kind of make these strong, like, male-male bonds, but revolved around female characters. And then they forage throughout the day and then come back and all sleep together in, these hanging nests that they make up in the canopy, which is pretty cool.
Do they ever, like, fight other tropes of gorillas? Do you have, like, monkey warfare? Some monkeys do that, right?
They do, yeah. In chimpanzees, I think it's more common. They're more aggressive. The bonobos typically not only intraspecies, which means like within their species, but also interspecies. They're much more passive. Mm. So they'll make a lot of noise when they hear or can tell that there's another trope approaching by chance. But usually, like, you know, that for the vast majority of observations, they kind of just avoid each other and don't get into fights, but it does occur, yeah, for sure.
Except when they're making love.
Except when they're making love, then it gets raucous. Mm-hmm. Speaking of making love, they do it a lot. I have a ridiculous statistic of 0.19 copulations per hour for the average male in a trope, which is a lot more sex than any of us are having.
Impressive numbers.
Impressive numbers, indeed. And they actually have sex as a form of maintaining social bonds, which is a lot different than a lot of other group living species like chimpanzees, that it's much more hierarchical. And for bonobos, sex is more of a way to maintain, yeah, those relationships.
Interesting.
Yeah, pretty cool.
What is the most interesting thing to you about the bonobo?
Well, I love how adapted they are, specialized to living in a mix of arboreal and terrestrial landscapes. So they do spend a lot of time on the ground foraging, but they will transition to the trees depending on where the food availability is, like depending on the season or what's ripe, you know, if fruit is more abundant on the ground, or for vegetative food is more abundant on the ground, then they'll be foraging on the ground. Otherwise, they'll be up in the trees. And they have a lot of really cool adaptations to help them navigate life in the trees. So a lot of, one of those being that they have basically adaptations to help them deal with the tension that is exerted on the musculoskeleton, or the musculoskeletature, probably didn't say that right. So basically, like, our ligaments, joints, bones are really good at dealing with compression. You know, when you walk, run, jump, that's all compressive force. And so for a big mammal or animal of any kind, like a bonobo or a champ or gorilla, to be hanging is a lot of force on those. You know, just like for us, if you were to try to do a monkey bars for more than just 10 monkey bars, it would start to hurt.
Yeah, wear out your shoulders.
Exactly. So they have adaptations like narrower scapula, so that their arms can reach more directly up overhead, like so that they're grabbing above their center of gravity. Whereas for us, you know, if we were to hang by an arm, we'd be kind of tilted like this.
Mm-hmm.
What else? They've got another really cool adaptation. Their fingers, the bones in their fingers, are actually curved. So if you look at the hand of a bonobo, and I think it's the same for chimps and other monkey species, their fingers are curved like this, which helps distribute the force of their grip equally all around the circumference of their hand. So if you imagine, since we have like a straight bone, then a joint, then a straight bone, when we grab onto a branch, there's going to be more pressure directed at the center of that bone, since mm-hmm. it's flat.
Yeah.
And so, since they have curved bones, it distributes the pressure all across the finger, which I think is really cool.
Oh, yeah, that's super interesting.
How long did bonobos live?
How long do they live? That's a good question. I don't know the answer to it.
Next question.
Stumper. You remember that. I'll put that in the footnotes. So this kind of adaptation for hanging is also, you know, it's not just an adaptation to allow them to be in the trees just for funsies, you know, because the view's better. It's all has a purpose. It's all tied together. The form always is tied to a function. So for bonobos, has a lot to do with foraging, with food acquisition. Their food is substantially fruit. They're omnivorous, but they eat a lot of fruit, and so they spend a lot of time hanging by one arm and reaching out and grabbing low-hanging fruit, kind of like we do, you know, if you can imagine going out into an orchard and picking apples and oranges, something like that, except they're hanging by one hand. So that's pretty cool.
Is there anything else as a non-bonobo scholar that we should be aware of?
Anything else as a non-bonobo scholar? What are you implying?
Well, I don't know. I mean, are there any key points we're missing? You know, we've learned a lot of interesting things.
About non-bonobos or about bonobos?
Bonobos.
Okay.
You know, are there any, like...
What are some of the pressing issues with bonobos right now? Like,
how is climate change affecting them? How is interacting with humanity? Like, are they being hunted? Are they predated? Are they endangered? Are they happy?
Good question. They are...
Are they happy monkeys?
They seem pretty happy to me. They have a lot of sex, so, I mean, who doesn't
presumably
like that?
Presumably puts you in a good mood.
What's that?
It presumably puts you in a good mood.
Presumably, I mean, they're 98% genetically related to us, so we've got to assume they share that in common. But as far as concerns, they are endangered, and most of that comes from habitat loss, deforestation, and poaching. Bushmeat is a pretty substantial form of nutrition for a lot of local people living close to the edges of bonobo habitat. And actually, interestingly, as the logging industry grows, they're able to cut through the jungle more efficiently. Well, they cut roads through the jungle, kind of like they do here with the Forest Service roads. And you know how that gives us a lot of access to cool hiking and maybe some areas that we wouldn't be able to get to otherwise without a trail. So locals are able to use those as well to get deeper into the jungle than they could have before and hunt and bring back bonobos to eat, which is pretty sad, but hopefully that's going to change as more research is being done. It's shown that research and tourism actually are some of the most effective deterrents to poaching, just to have that human presence there. So yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I think we know a little bit more about the bonobo.
Learned a few things. Learned about how they love to have sex and how they are really good at climbing trees. And how their hands are super cool. Let's see if I have anything else that I want to shoot off before I leave you guys. This was a cool study that was done. So this will be my last talking point. So they're very communicative vocally. So when troops meet back up at night, they make a lot of commotion, a lot of noise, running around, pleading, chasing, grooming. So also very physically communicative. But when the study was looking at how they communicate in terms of food acquisition, they played recordings of a bonobo that had found a preferred food, which I believe was kiwis, and then recorded calls of a bonobo that had found a less preferred food, which were apples in this case. And it was found that it wasn't that the calls differed, like a different call for a good food or bad food, but it was that the sequences of calls changed. So it was actually found that different sequences imparted different information, imparted information about the quality of food, which is pretty complex foraging communication. And it kind of makes sense because when they're foraging, they're often in thick jungle, in a thick understory on the ground, and they can't see each other, so they use soft calling to maintain contact. And so I just found that super interesting, that there's a lot of information stored in the sequence of calls, not just whether it's a high-pitched call or a low-pitched call or anything like that. So I think that's it, guys. Thanks for joining me. Yeah. And
mainly, I'm just excited to be on this podcast. I've been waiting for years. It's a long list.
Hey, thank you. Well, I appreciate you being here.